Hey everybody, Daniel, thanks for tuning into this week's episode of The Perceptive Photographer. And for the next 2 weeks, we're going to tackle one of the kind of quintessential books on critical theory for photography, and that's Roland Barthes' Camera and Lucida. This is a book that I think most people who are engaged in the art of photography should take time to read and really evaluate what the text is trying to say, because I think it provides some really interesting insights to our understanding of photography and how we come to view images and create images that matter. What makes it a challenge is that Roland Barthes was a literary theorist, a linguist, a philosopher, a semiotician. So he wasn't a photographer. As a matter of fact, he really didn't take photographs because he thought the process took too long to get results. He said he would, you know, photograph with a Polaroid camera for the instantaneous results, but really wasn't interested in photography as an art. In 1977, after his mother passed away, he began to really look at some of those photographs that came out of his family, and some of them really resonated with him and others didn't. So he decided to spend some time really thinking about what was photography and what made a photograph work for him. Camera Lucida is actually a series of very, really small essays that kind of cover the essence of what Barthes saw as his own experience looking at photographs and how he became aware of his own understanding of how photographs resonate within himself and how they resonate within society. I've broken the podcast into two parts because Roland's book is broken into two parts, into a part one, which is kind of the basic understanding of the photographs, and then part two, where he really starts to delve a little bit deeper into photographs that ascribe a lot of meaning to him. And so breaking the podcast in two will give us the chance to kind of really delve in a little bit more detail into both of those different topics, because they kind of isolate themselves a little bit, but they're a little bit related. One of the things that Barthes starts off with is he looks at a photograph that was taken of Napoleon's younger brother in 1852. And what he realized was that he was seeing in that photograph the eyes of somebody who had seen the emperor, or Napoleon in this case. And it really got him interested in recognizing the amazement of photography and how he really got more interested in that still image and what really came from that. And at the same time, he was trying to understand on what was photography in itself and how did a photograph distinguish itself from the sea of images that was being created over and over again as we're inundated with imagery. So if you think about this book being written in the 1970s versus today and how many more images we're inundated with today, with billions and billions of images being created, I think the discussion he has still holds true. It has something for us to think about. What is that notion of photography? What is it about that that really makes it work? One of the things that Roland does is he breaks apart the idea of the creator of the image, which he calls the operator, or the operator of the camera, and those that look at photographs, which he calls the spectator. And they have two different ways of seeing and two different ways of understanding photography. So just that breaking apart was pretty important. And knowing that he's a linguist and a philosopher and language was so important, that breaking apart of those two was something that was really critical. Something else he was really concerned with, when you look at what photography does, and this is one of my issues when I think about limited editions in photography and only having a single print, is that one of photography's greatest strengths is it can reproduce an infinite number of times a moment that only occurred once in history. And that's something that Roland really talks about in the book, about how important that is to our understanding of photography, that we are experiencing things beyond the moment and it can be done multiple times. He also has the idea that a photograph is always of an object. It's always of something. And that those photographs are expressive and critical from a sociological standpoint, a psychological standpoint, a linguistic standpoint. And that photos always show us one thing on the surface, but to really understand a photograph, we have to go to a second level of understanding. The other thing that Barthes does when you read through the book is he was really selective about the photographs he looked at and he studied. So he didn't look at all the photographs in history. He really only looked at the photographs that really resonated with him and photographs that he was in. And then specifically the photographs he was in, the photographs where he was aware that somebody was taking his picture, because he believed that there was this notion of an altered state of the photograph. So as the operator creates the photograph, they cause a change in the scene. They cause a shift in what's actually occurring by inclusion and exclusion of the frame and all those different components. when looking at a portrait specifically, he says when you're taking a portrait and when you're looking and evaluating portraits, he felt that in the portrait, you could present who you think you are in the portrait as your picture is getting taken. You could present who others think you are in the portrait. You could present yourself as who the photographer thinks you are, and then you could present yourself as who the photographer is making you out to be for the exhibit. As the subject of the photograph, you have that component. As the operator, you're able to extend and expand those notions. And as a spectator, your job is to come back in and try to understand the photograph and get to all those things we've talked about in other podcasts around meaning and intention and how the photograph was created. But you do that through a different level of study. As he looked at photographs and those that really mattered, he broke it down into two areas. And this is kind of the key thesis when you think about Camera Lucida and reading the book, as dense as it is and kind of random as it is. Like I said, it's a series of essay collections. He breaks down the study of a photograph into two components, studium and punctum. Studium is to study the photograph. It's where we find intention. It's where we find all the rules of composition and all those elements. And we're going to talk a little bit more in depth in a second about how he breaks that down into subclassifications. Punctum is from the point of pressure. It's like an arrow. He says it's like an arrow that pierces him. When he looks at a photograph that resonates with him, it's one that he wants to linger. And it's those photographs that he's trying to understand, because photographs in general that only contain studium are looked at for a number of reasons. They may be providing a certain level of information, but they're forgotten. They don't have that component that resonates with us. In returning to studium, when we look at the photographs and we break a photograph down on that, he said a photograph could be a photograph to inform. It could tell us what something is. It could tell us where something is. It could be to represent something. He talks about how poetry or how photography and painting are somewhat interrelated, and that really photographs are representations of a very primitive theater, because the actors are motionless and they're fake and they're basically hiding within this still life. So if you think about a photograph, nothing's in motion. A photograph that has punctum is able to break out of that, and the actors or the components of the photograph become real. They have motion. They're able to be something besides fake. So that's an element there that breaks that apart. Studium also has photographs that are there to create a surprise. The photographer or the operator is in attempting to show us something rare, something we can't see with our own eye, maybe something for technical prowess, like a really high-speed photograph freezing a drop of water. That might be a contortion of technique through depth of field or something like that, or a lucky find, just something the photographer stumbles across. We could also have photographs that are about things that could be signified. A good photograph speaks to us as a layer of a mask. It hides and obfuscates things that society wants us to not talk about. And a good photograph, when studied, oftentimes allow us to have a more accurate understanding of what's going on in our culture, whether or not we choose to accept that or not. He also talks about, when studying a photograph in studium and really delving deep into it, this notion of to waken a desire. And he breaks that down, and this is, kind of, I think, one of the more interesting aspects of this. His example of this is, if you look at a photograph and it's a travel photograph of some place you might want to visit, it doesn't really invoke any emotional connection or any response. But sometimes you look at a photograph and you think you want to live there. You want to be more engaged with the environment. And that's where we start to move into this other realm of what a photograph could be, where it actually has applied that pressure. It's created that additional meaning. Photographs that don't have that additional meaning, he considered unary, which is just photographs of studium, but not affected by punctum. They didn't have any of that response, any of that additional component. And what's interesting about that additional component of that photograph is it's not defined as a specific component, and it's unique to each spectator. And I think that's one of the challenges that photographers have in finding work that matters, is that you're not always in control of that spectator. And this is one of the things that's so good about reading this book, is that Barth is only speaking from his own perspective. And because of that, he's really taken the time to think about what does he see in the photograph and how does he respond to the photograph, without necessarily worrying about whether or not it's right for everybody else. which is something I think a lot of photographers struggle with, is how do they get their work to speak that universal realm? But you don't always have control of that. He talks about in some cases it might be the subject matter the person's responding to, or it might be a detail within the photograph. It could be a necklace that a woman's wearing is the necklace that your grandmother wore, and that's why that photograph resonates with you. You may not even have that awareness when you initially look at the photograph. It might be something that comes after the fact. As we look more and more about what all these components are, and you have this studium, which is that critical study and understanding of the photograph, and in most cases, Roland says that, like I said earlier, those photographs don't stick with us. And that's where most photography lies. It's good photography, it's technical photography, it's critical, it provides a purpose of documentary, it provides a purpose of advertising, whatever it is, but it doesn't have that essence to move it forward. And because he's not a creator, he's not concerned about what do we do behind the camera to have that move forward. What he's concerned about in the analysis is what is the response within himself that allows him to identify those photographs. And that's why I think we really need to take the time to look at this book and read and understand this material, because it does remove all of that stuff that we normally focus on about creating a good photograph and really try to resonate with what are those deeper connections. A couple other components about that notion of punctum is that it's not coded. There is no specific language. There is no specific label we can put on a photograph that has that essence. It is something that happens. It is something that resonates with us that we don't always necessarily understand. But the longer we spend with the photograph, the more we'll eventually be able to identify what is the source of the response, even if we're not sure of what the emotional response or emotional connection might be. The other element of punctum that's interesting is it's also what we add to the image and how we extend the image beyond the frame. If you start imagining what's outside the photograph's physical framing elements, what's going on around, how objects relate, you're starting to move out of studium and into this realm of photographs having more material meaning, because you're extending and making that motionless, lifeless photograph come to life. You're putting it into more three-dimensional world. That is at a point where it becomes a tipping point. The final thing about punctum that Barth realizes is that when it's triggered, it's not just what he's adding to the photograph, but it's also in response to what's in the photograph. And when that happens, when something becomes more real in the photograph, it's what he called a blind field. He talks about this with cinema and how in motion pictures, things come to life because they're animated and they seem to move from image to image. If you close your eyes during a movie and reopen them, the scene has changed. Whereas a photograph, the actors are still the same within the still photograph. But that can change. If the photograph has punctum and you get that response, things become more real. They become more dimensional. They take on a life of their own. And that was something that he noted in a photograph. That sense of becoming more animated, becoming something outside the frame, was critical to a photograph having really successful punctum. At the end of part one, he realizes that he's got to go away and he's got to think more about what it really means to have a photograph. What is it that allows him to create this feeling? And so he's got to go back and think about this, because the nature of the image is still unknown to him. The nature of what makes a photograph, even after coming up with very specific ways of classifying, categorizing, and coding the way we have a photograph, we still don't fully understand that. So in part two, he starts to delve into a little bit more about what is it about specific photographs? What is it about a certain photograph of his mother? What is it a certain photograph of his childhood that has him create this connection and have that response? And we'll take a look at that second half of that book in next week's podcast. If you haven't read Camera Lucida, I encourage you to pick it up. You can find a link to it in the show notes, available up at Amazon. It's not a thick read. It's not a long read. But it is a little bit disjointed. I think if there was a criticism people have, is that it's a little bit random, like I said, because it's a series of small essay collections that really pull the book together. But a great book to really help you start to understand how somebody who's not a photographer, who's looking and attempting to understand photography, might come and approach a photograph, even if they're not aware of the terms and concepts that are in there. I hope you have a great week behind the camera. Don't forget, you can always find us on iTunes or on the website at www.theperceptivephotographer.com. And I will see you next time when we go over part two.